Hello, everyone. I'm so glad I made it here again each and every week. Coming like a redundancy. I'm here every time. You click back and I turn right back on and Lenny Fontana makes it back once again. Thankfully, it's been a rough week. Just to bring you all up to speed, I got word that Miss Kathy Brown is doing pretty good. Can't say 100%. But she walked out of that hospital and went home, and she's getting it together. And the next fella that I'm bringing on, his real name, Duchess Yahoon, which I'm glad he told me. It's a very, very authentic Dutch name, Yahoon. And it's super cool. Also, the weather's been holding up pretty good in New York, thankfully. But I'm so, like, once again, so happy that we've been pushing TikTok and everybody's watching the shows again on TikTok and we're getting so many followers. Please keep sharing the shows. It's working. YouTube Live, as you all know, we've been taking on YouTube Live. That's been going very well. Facebook is showing me no love. Those copyright issues and the sharing just seems, I know we have to do something with Spotify with it, but thanks again for all of you for following us on Spotify with the True House Story Show. And we're building a wonderful fan base. And as you all know, in my shows, we try to get things historically right. So we may go to a classic artist, which would be legacy, someone that's now and someone that is happening up and coming and now and our future. So welcome to True House Stories. I'm Lenny Fontana coming out of New York City. This week, we take it over the pond where there's lots of canals in a place that started a lot of things. Music is one of them because they came over very early to America as settlers. And this is the Dutch settlers. And the Dutch have been doing a lot of things in dance music. Some of the best record producers of today, and some of the labels are actually coming out of the Amsterdam area, one being Spinnin', another being Armada. Those that know that I'm friends with Armin van Buuren as well, and the legendary Ben Liebrand, who has had a radio show for decades, is part of our class of alumni that have been on the show with us and told his story right here on True House Stories. But today we're going to a younger cat, younger guy, which is so cool. Real young guy. And let me put you like this. Even the name, I'm going to say his name, De Hoffner. Love the name, De Hoffner. Why? Because he helped cultivate, or should I say help create, as one of the original settlers in this house music game, a genre called Tropical House, okay? And has taken it to another level. To a point where worldwide, in excess of over 600 million streams, his music, over 600 million, we could be somewhere close to a billion probably by now, which we don't know numbers. I asked him, we really don't really know, but it could be anywhere between 800 million or 900 million. But that's a lot of streaming on his music. And I have to congratulate him on that because there's not many people that could say that, that has that kind of impact and that kind of reach. He is our future. He plays festivals. He plays all the clubs in Europe. I asked if he came to America to do anything yet. He said, no, I guess that's on his bucket list. And I would presume that that will happen soon before you know it. But with everything I could say is this. We must keep pushing our young guys because they are setting the ways and standards to where we're all going and heading. So I'd like to introduce you all to the man himself, De Hoffner on True House Stories. Welcome, my man. How are you?
What an invite. Thank you. I'm doing very good. Very good. And you?
Tired and stressed and excited. I got you here. We had some crazy stuff today, but I made it here. I wasn't sure if I was going to make the show, but we made the show happen. The machine is on. And I wanted to say, everyone, send some positive thoughts to De Hoffner. His dad had surgery, which, thank God, he told me everything went great. But we want a speedy recovery for his back. So exactly. Let's make sure. Because he was almost not going to make the show today if something was not right. He may have called me and said, no show today. But thank you to Hoffner, even though I know you, it's important, your dad. I'm so glad you're here with us, and thank you again. So, to Hoffner, let's get right into it. Because I know you have a lot to tell us. When you were a young kid, okay, young, you know, grammar school.
Yeah.
How does music find you, the young guy?
It was like, I think like a normal Dutch kid. Both of my parents weren't that into music, but the radio was always on. And when we went on holiday to Spain or to France, there was always this like CDs playing in the car with mostly Dutch pop music. And I think like a while later in my life, I was introduced to house music or electronic music, because like my dad and mom didn't listen to it. I think they only knew like Genkraft.
You say Genkraft or
the German
Kraftwerk?
Kraftwerk, that's the one. Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure I was close. So you had Kraftwerk playing on in the house.
Not that much. But
come on, man.
My dad found it like interesting, and when we were talking about electronic music, it was only that band, you know.
But okay, so your parents, of course, grew up at a time where soul music and the UK and what was that other radio station? Luxembourg radio was popular. A lot of people talk about that in Europe, that they were listening to that typical radio station because it was bringing something different, like soul music. Where was that?
I'm not sure they were like into soul music.
It was kind of music were your parents playing?
Like just like the top 40 music, like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, like the typical.
What was on the radio, music. Basically?
Exactly, right? Exactly. They weren't like music lovers.
Okay, so
my mom always told to me when I was a kid, like maybe you can play the keys, it's fun, and I was like, nah, I want to play football and stay behind my computer, and now I regret it.
You regret not learning how to play piano keys?
Exactly.
Why? Yeah. Why? You're still doing what you're doing, but what happened?
Like I can play the keys while I'm producing, but I don't like can read sheet music or play something by ear. And I'm always like very jealous when people just can sit behind the piano and just play the keys whatever they want, like improvise and stuff. It's just so inspiring, and I went to a lot of like piano classical music concerts too. I really like the piano as an instrument too.
Ah, so you like classical music?
Like the modern classic, like Ludovico and Audi and stuff. The more like light stuff.
Okay. So take us on the journey. So really, football is really the number one thing for you at that time. You're playing football and games. Game Boy, all that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's also why I was introduced with music, because I was kind of like a computer nerd. So I always like downloaded this new software that was online or get a copy on my school. And then I had this like little CD with Magic's Music Maker, I think.
Ah, okay.
And it was called EJ, the software. I was just fucking around with the program and was making music when I was like 13, maybe 12, 13, 14.
Was YouTube started yet at that point?
I think it was Google Video here over here.
Well, that's the question. That's where I'm alluding to my question.
Okay, cool.
So here's what, back when we all started, there was nothing like that. We had no internet.
I know.
No watching somebody explain to you logic. Did you have anybody help you, show you on the television or?
I'm not sure. I only can remember that like my neighbor was maybe 2, 3 years older than me, and he was a DJ, and I was always like very interested in what he did. And but he was just a DJ at schools and home parties and that kind of stuff. But I can remember I went to him, and I asked like, "What are you doing behind the decks?" The decks was just like a CD player, like two, and he was mixing. And I was like, but I always thought that you were creating the music behind the decks. And he was like, no, it's made by a producer. And then I went searching on the internet how to produce the
Okay,
sound
so here's the
and play.
question. So when he said to you, it's made by a producer, did you say to yourself, what is a producer?
Of course.
Okay, because people think, we magically knew all these things. Does it
Exactly.
work?
No, just small like, but
What do you mean, producer?
what is the difference between like when it's like Beyonce or Tiësto? What's and then he told me like, yeah, but Beyonce sings on it and she has a producer to produce the music. And then he's like, but Tiësto also like creates the music that he plays. So it was a little bit confusing at the moment, but yeah, that's when I really started to search on the internet about what does a producer do, how do you make the music on the computer and stuff. And then I found this little CD like the EJ Magic's Music Maker.
And then begins, right? So
Yeah, that was the very start.
what was your original first setup?
Ah, wow, it was just like a very old PC, Windows, maybe 97, 2000. I don't even know. I think it was the 2000 when I started
So it'd
producing.
be Windows 98 or Windows 2000.
98, yes, exactly. And it was all just for fun, just playing around. The same, I always like downloaded like Photoshop and like playing with the paint. I think it was like Word Paint, just to try different stuff on the computer, not especially to work on music, but work with a computer to do stuff and to create stuff.
Okay, Yahoon, here's the question. When you were in basically just starting to test out your skills, what were you thinking about as far as your school level stuff? In other words, for career, what were you thinking that you were going to be doing for a career? Was it music, or were you thinking like you're going to become a lawyer or a doctor or some?
I don't think I was busy with that at that moment, but I did go to school for to work in a laboratory. So it's very different.
Kind of laboratory are we talking about?
Like the CSI stuff.
Oh, right,
To get to
forensic
steal your
with the
forensic stuff,
you
to
see, you
steal your
actually.
DNA to get you from a yeah, that was.
Oh,
And I always find it like interesting, and it was kind of cool, but in the end, it was not for me and too technical. And I was always like very interested in biology and stuff like that, but to do like every day, it's a very hard job.
what qualifications do you need to become in school? Like, what's part of the prerequisite to become a forensic expert like you would have been? How much schooling was involved for you to go through all that to get it done?
I had to school like every day, but I didn't go every day. I went to festivals and stuff. So that's one of the reasons I'm not a forensic
Expert.
laboratory. But,
So how
yeah,
many years?
exactly.
How many years you would have had to do that to get to get all the certificate?
It depends how far you want to go. You can like, I think it could be done in 4 years,
Oh, it's a
maybe four or
long
five
time.
years. Yeah,
Yep.
it's a long time. And afterwards, you can go more like
Sure.
specific on one. So
Special.
it depends. But
See.
it was planned to be 4 years.
So mom and dad have this idea in their head that their baby boy is going to become a forensics expert. And
Exactly.
now what happens is there's a left turn that clicks and happens. Mom and dad, sit down.
Yeah, and they weren't very happy in the beginning,
Let's have that
but
conversation. Let's have that conversation. Let me ask the question again. How did you go to them to say, we are not going any further with school? We are stopping the school to do this music.
After the CSI study, I did another study, and it was in like media and design.
Okay, good.
So I was always interested in the computer and stuff, so that was more logical to do. But in the end, school just wasn't for me. So when I told my parents I want to do music, they were relieved that I found something that worked for me. In the beginning, they find it like very hard to believe that you can make music out of it. But after, I think, maybe a half year, I already showed them I was earning the same money as I would do when I finished the study. So,
okay. So again, you start doing your production work. You start working on the computer. How long does it take you before you get the first project ready to bring around to a record label?
That's actually kind of funny because I wasn't producing music to release it on record labels or stuff. I just put it out on SoundCloud, and then the record labels were messaging me to release it. So to take it one step back, when I was like 14, 15, I was just making this very typical EDM-ish kind of house. Like, I was a fan of like Hardwell and Layback Luke, Fato Gonzalez, the Dutch guys. And I can remember that Martin Garrix was releasing Epic. And I was like, nah. It's not my style of music, and right. all the DJs were going that direction, and I was like, nah, let's just quit making music. It was all for fun, and it's not that I want to be like this big DJ or stuff. I never hit any decks to play live, so I was like, nah, just delete like Fruity Loops. I was producing in Fruity Loops at that moment. Like, let's delete it and we will see what happens next in my life. And then when I was used to go to like school, I went to a lot of festivals, and there I saw Baker Matt playing at a big festival. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, this is the music I like.
Okay.
And I don't think it's that hard to produce. So I reinstalled Fruity Loops on my laptop.
Okay.
And then I made this record. It's called Sonnestraal. And I showed it to my friends. And my friends were like, this is good music. The rest you made was just garbage. And I put it on SoundCloud. And in like a few weeks, months, it went viral, viral, and viral. And then Crosswalk, a French label, hit me up on SoundCloud to release it officially.
Did everything go well with that contract and everything?
I don't want to talk trash on the show, but...
No, here's what I want you to do. It's not talking trash. I just want you to be honest.
It's just like when we're talking about... it's all about Tropic House today, right? Like how it came to life. And Crosswalk is one of the labels why Tropical House is here. So that's why I don't want to talk trash about them. But a lot of guys, the same as me, we signed the contract and had a little troubles later on in our career, to put it like this. Because we didn't know about like options and stuff.
Oh. So and did they mention to you about getting a lawyer to look at it? And that, or you just signed it?
I was just like happy to sign it because
I was
20.
Okay, so 19, you were underage. Okay, so you were adult already. Okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't meant to be the beginning of a DJ career. It was just meant to be like, yeah, let's put it out. I was happy that I can show my music to the rest of the world and maybe earn some money with it.
But and then, really just get records out. You weren't thinking
exactly.
About
it. Yeah, exactly. You were, but it wasn't that bad. Like the contract wasn't that bad. Like when we're talking about like percentages and stuff, but there was just this little sentence that I had like to do 12 tracks with them in the future. Yeah, there was kind of a lot.
So wait, so you, basically you signed a 13 track deal, like an almost
yeah,
like an album.
Album deal. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
How did you get out of it?
Well,
how did you finish it, I should say?
In the meantime, like after like a few months, I was getting signed with Spinning, but they didn't knew about the contract. And later on, I was signed with Amara and they didn't knew about the contract. So like 4 or 5 years later, they called my manager like, yeah, he has to do like 12 more tracks with us because he didn't send all these demos to us. And it was something like the Dutch law was a little bit different than the French law in like options here in Holland. It's like when you send it and they right. don't accept it, you already sent the option.
Sure.
And in France it was like, you have to send the demo, like the option, but when we don't want it, we want the next one. That's what they're saying to us. So there was like lawyers and stuff, and I think I did like 6 tracks more with them, and we're all fine with each other because they did a really good job making my music big and making the Tropical House music big.
At that point, were you starting to think about going out as a touring DJ, or was that something that was still far away to become, you know, the main headliner DJ at these like festivals and stuff?
And it went quite fast after that release because it was this big Tropical House hype. So I think a few months after my first record, Sonnestraal, went on SoundCloud and went official, I was already doing gigs in Belgium and France as a headliner. It wasn't that like the big festivals, but I was like the headliner on the house show.
Okay, so this is now officially called Tropical House, but pre to that was called Melodic House, correct?
I think everything with like a new genre is hard to say what it is. I can remember that I called it, and more guys from the scene call it like Melodic Deep House or something, but nowadays like Melodic Deep House is something else.
Yeah.
So I think we called it like that because it was deep house-ish with melodic elements, like more like melodic instruments, like the saxophone and the violins and stuff like that. So I think that's why we called it that way. And it's kind of funny because I was producing more like the piano house with saxophone vibe, and then you had this other way with Kygo,
right?
And they both were named Tropical House, but the tempo was different and some elements were different, but I guess like the vibe was kind of the same. Mm-hmm. So it went on one big Yeah. It was all called the Tropical House, but sometimes it wasn't that tropical at all. It was just like happy and light house music.
Right. But see, I've been under the conclusion that you are one of the innovators of that genre, if not an important piece to the genre of Tropical House.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't many people doing it at that time, right?
No, that is one of the reasons why I'm doing this at my age still, because I was one of the first, I think, that produced it, and no one could know that the genre was getting that big. I think a lot of house music starts and new house music starts in Holland and like Norway, France. Totally. And it was the same with this genre. Yeah, we're making the people were making tropical house music in France, Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, Denmark, I think.
Yep.
And it's kind of funny because it's very cold out here. It's like nothing tropical. It's like first shows were in Belgium and France. It's like not that tropical, right?
It's damp, it's wet, it's cold, there's no sun, it's gray.
It's so strange.
Why do we do tropical house music in that area?
I think it was like this in my opinion, why I started like the tropical house thing is because it was like a counter genre to the big room EDM animal style, Martin Garrix, you know what I mean?
Alessio, all those guys.
Yeah. And we were done with it. And I was like, let's chill a little bit and make house music that's also possible to listen when you're at home or when you study. That was actually funny about the genre. It was very strange because here in Holland, it wasn't that big like the first year.
Right.
Because people here in Holland only were listening it when they had to study or when they had friends over on the background. Yeah. And in France, I was doing these headline shows and people were raving on tropical house music. So it was very strange for me that there's this disconnect between what the purpose of tropical house was for.
Yeah, because that is strange.
It's strange, right? Because
yeah, you're thinking about, you're going there with the idea you're going to be doing electro EDM. And you got people going mad for your sound.
That's crazy, huh?
You never know what's going to hit.
No. The crowd decides why they want to listen to it and how they dance to it, how to listen to it and where. So that was in the beginning kind of funny. And also when I went bigger as a DJ, and I have still this problem, when I had shows in Holland, I had to play different kind of music,
right,
than when I played in the rest of Europe or the world. Because the first, I think, 2 years I was touring Europe, maybe 1 or 2, 3 shows a year in Holland, and afterwards I was doing the shows in Holland, but also in like Brazil it went very big, the tropical house genre, and in Asia and in Africa, yeah,
very big.
But the I think the Dutch people never went that crazy on the tropical house music on like the festivals or clubs.
But you're still getting booked to do it, right? In Holland? To play those sets or no?
Yeah, but I play like the my biggest hits, that why I was booked. And then I always had a build up to more, it was called Deep House at that moment, but yep. I thought Deep House nowadays is a little bit different. It was more the underground side. I don't know if you know the names. Kölsch. It was like German music.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the same groove, a little bit higher in the BPM, but still like a little bit the same elements, but more like groovy. And in my opinion, tropical house sometimes stays a little bit too, how do you say it? Like, yeah, how the Dutch people were listening to it, just to listen to it and not to dance to it that much, as like more groovy stuff, more hard stuff.
Sure, because, you know, it's funny when you mention about Germany. I know that part of Holland actually speaks German.
Yeah.
That I know. So it lends itself to have some of the German music and fashion and all that to that part. And when you were saying that, I'm sitting there going, I know this because I've heard this before from other people that lived in Holland, but they were influenced by German techno and that music.
It's like the techno from then had like this overlap between like the house, deep house, and techno. I was really into that as a person. So it had a lot of influence in my music and in my DJ sets too. And still.
So in the beginning of physically DJing, did you start with the vinyl culture or you were already digital?
No, it was very, very digital because till my very first gig as D. Hoffner, because D. Hoffner was started when I was producing this new kind of music. And I never hit like a vinyl or the Pioneer sets before.
Okay.
And not on like pub gigs or school gigs or nothing. And because I was going to those festivals and not studying and go to the pub a lot, I didn't have like any money at the moment. I had to do my first gigs. So my friends bought a Traktor S4. I don't know if you know it. It's like this console that you have to connect to your computer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had, I think, like one of my best friends did my bookings at that moment and is still my manager till these days. And he said to me, like, let's put it like this. I had a lot of requests on my SoundCloud if I want to DJ on that party. But I always said, like, no, I'm just a producer. I'm not a DJ. And after like 10, 12 emails, we were drinking a beer and he said, like, just forward one of those emails to me and I will reply to it. And maybe we can fix something.
Right.
And then like after 3 days, he said, like, okay, in 1 month, you're playing a headliner show in Belgium for more than 500 euros, I think, for 1.5 hours. I was like, okay. But I couldn't DJ. And I didn't have the stuff to learn it. So my friends had to buy this gear for me.
You have some practice. Nice friends, bro. You got
I'm very thankful. Yeah.
Mr. J has got some really cool boy friends around him because my friends would have been like, what are you out of your mind? I'm buying you.
But they went to a lot of shows with me and I think the stories we built together are worth it. Yeah.
With becoming a superstar because there's some benefits to hanging out with the superstar DJ. Okay, so you get the first gig and you have to learn basically how to play music and you get normally music off the digital side from the computer and everything, of course. When does it take off for you, like from this point, from where you start? To what's the first record that you make that everything goes, wow, like, you know?
I think there are a few moments when my career really started, like, kicked off.
Yeah.
One of those was, like my very first one that I put out on SoundCloud. It was called Sonnestral. Already mentioned it.
Yeah.
And that's because... when you have a song on SoundCloud, sometimes on the right there's like this recommended section, yeah. And you had like Baker Matt at that time that was very popular here in Holland and also popular in France. And every time his record was playing, my record was next. It was because people were searching on it, but also because there wasn't that much else like in this genre.
There's not a lot coming into that genre yet. It's still,
So I was like, when you are one of the first ones, it's like this perfect combination between lucky and I was producing the great stuff, but you have to be lucky in music because otherwise, like, you can produce the best music that you ever made, but when people don't find it, it's nothing. It's like, it's nothing.
But did you have to do anything as far as any kind of, I don't want to say it like this, but I'm going to put it out there. Don't be insulted, but let me put it out there.
I think that the direction is clear.
Yeah. People think, and I've seen this from other numbers, like you'll go to someone's site a SoundCloud site, let's just say, for example, you'll look at their followers and they have 1 million plays, no comments. A lot of people are buying fake buys. Did you have to do any of that in the beginning of your career?
No. And
that's saying the music is bad that they're doing.
And that's very, in my opinion, is very strange because I had a profile maybe of like 100 followers and they weren't that active. And they were just using, at that time, you can use like the right tags to be found. Nowadays, like SoundCloud is one hell of a jungle. At that time, it was just the beginning of SoundCloud.
Right.
And I built my career on SoundCloud. And I must say, also because of the, I think it was already in the beginning, this the gates, when you want to download my track, because it was all free download.
Yeah.
If you want to download my track, mm-hmm. you had to follow my SoundCloud, and my Facebook, and my Instagram. And
wow.
I'm not sure Instagram was already there, but yeah. So in 1 year, I had like 50,000 followers on Facebook without doing any gigs, only because people were downloading the music.
Wow, that's awesome. You know, again, to even get 5,000 now is tough. You have 50,000 back then. Because you go on some of these guys, these younger producers, and you look at their numbers and you go, well, how do they have 900,000 followers?
And sometimes, like in the past, I thought like this is never possible. It's like it's all fake. But I saw it recently on me and my friend who started all of this, like my old booker and my manager at the moment.
Yep.
We have our own management office here, and one of our artists is getting like big on TikTok right now, and also like Instagram, and he's like growing that fast that I was like, it's never real, but it is real. It is possible when people are getting like more commercial or ready to be found. It is possible to grow fast. I had the same thing. It's happening with one of our artists right now. Some people say like it's all fake. It isn't. It is possible. Still today. Yeah, like it's still possible today.
Yeah, no, I believe that. But you know what? With all the fake buying going on and
yeah.
all the
yeah,
fake.
Yeah, yeah.
This and fake that.
I must say one of the reasons why SoundCloud wasn't that popular, like let's say 5 years ago, there was like this moment, it was one hell of a jungle and no one was using it anymore. I think nowadays it's getting popular again, but was because of the reposting battles. I don't know if you ever heard of this.
What do you mean the reposting battle? Maybe I did. Maybe not.
Let's say like I've got a 100K followers.
Yeah.
And you also have 100K followers.
Right.
When I post a track, I ask you to repost it. And when you have a track out, I will repost it.
Oh, I see. So you guys are sharing your lists.
Exactly. And in the beginning, it was great fun because we were helping each other and we were helping the genre and the community. But then people were getting smart and building this repost systems that everyone was automatically reposting each other whenever they put something on SoundCloud.
Oh, really? So I see what happened. So the genre was starting to move quick because his 100,000 hear it, the other guy's 100,000 hear
it. Exactly.
And they would share it and share it and share it. So I can see how it's possible. You know what? It has to be that way because if you buy the fake buys, the algorithms don't allow it to go anywhere. It just stays flat, like a flat response, you know?
So for the artists who were already big on SoundCloud, it was great fun. But for the new generation, it was very shitty because they didn't get fined. because it was all of the same artist. They were reposting, reposting again.
Oh, wow. Do they, okay, so people understand, do they fine you now for that stuff?
You mean like SoundCloud is I'm not sure. When I was more releasing like officially, I only put things on SoundCloud to be fine on SoundCloud, and never did like the marketing stuff again on SoundCloud, and also didn't do a lot of bootlegs anymore because I had to do things officially with the labels now.
Right, because you're now working in the system. You're not outside the system trying to get in the system. Yeah,
exactly. And if you want my honest opinion, I miss the old days that you just create this little bootleg and went viral in one day. And now I have to work with like top liners and stuff and people in the studio and contracts and the people want a higher percentage, and then the label doesn't like it, and then you're like 2 years further and nothing happens.
Oh man, that's terrible. And but it happens. It happens.
Yeah. So sometimes a little bit jealous of the old Hofner, how he used to work. But I'm more skilled now, and I love the people I work with, and met all those great producers and singer songwriters. So, but sometimes I look back as a bedroom producer.
Really? Oh, really?
Just doing stuff for fun and put it on SoundCloud. And when it got to place, I was happy. But when it doesn't, it was like, oh, who gives a shit?
See, that's something that, you know, it's tough, because when we were all starting to make music, we cared about every part of it. Now it's kind of become an expendable thing where, you know, it's more about the gig than the actual music, in a sense, where the music used to be the driving force for the artist to gig for the music. It's all reversed now. It's different, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a little bit the same for me. In my opinion, when I started DJing, it was because people liked my music I produced behind my computer. So it was my project, and maybe the promoter just liked me and the crowd didn't know me.
Right.
And nowadays, and it's logical, but sometimes it's hard to see the wrong people at the poster because they're just like selling tickets and not there for music. But I don't want to sound like this old dude, you know. But in the beginning, the promoters were booking more the new stuff and what they liked, and not what the crowd liked.
Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is something where you have to believe in yourself as an artist.
Yeah,
and say
you're strong.
Right, you have to be a forward person. Like that foot has to come forward and say, "You're gonna like what I'm giving you."
Yeah.
And not be always afraid that, oh, I'm going to lose what I created, because that's not what music is. Music is a heart thing. It's a creativity thing. It's something that just happens.
It's not true, but the bills has to be paid. So sometimes you have to find this compromise.
What's the bill? Wait.
Yeah. God.
What do you mean? For a guy like you who is rich like you are? Come on, man.
No. The bills has to be paid. So sometimes you have to make a decision that are hard.
Well, there's a way of saying it more so. You have to make critical decisions to make something what we call commercially viable, meaning that people are going to like what you're doing. Because you could try to do this classical sound in this thing and go, it's cool for me, but does it really work for the mass?
Yeah.
You know,
but as a producer, we all want to make the sound you feel you sure. want to hear. And in the beginning, it doesn't matter how many people are listening to it, but when you are building a career, it really does.
And that's something that's important that people don't understand.
Yeah,
that it's a business. it's not just a hobby or a love.
No, exactly.
What started out as something that maybe I'm going to go into the forensic and maybe I'll do the music on the side became forensics became no, music became the business. And then the chance of you seeing the money starting to come in, then the, each piece like a brick to another brick, you know, as you're building the foundation, it's getting bigger and stronger. And then the last part of it is, how do I maintain staying there?
Yeah, exactly.
And not losing that.
And sometimes the like producer D. Hoffner is something else than like the DJ D. Hoffner. Let's make an example. When I had like the most busy time of my career, I was touring a lot. I couldn't be like every day in my studio because I was touring. And I had like a co-producer in my hometown working on my tracks too. But I lost the feeling with my own music because like it was good for my career. But as a, like a person and producer, the Hoffner, I was losing my product.
My
music.
Oh, that's not good. So how did you find yourself? So how did you find that feeling again, that excitement to say, I got to get myself structured, grounded, and back to square one again? What brought that back for you?
One of the people that said it to me at that moment, like it went very good with my career, but my manager said to me like, Jeroen, you have to make more music again because the Hoffner sound, we miss the Hoffner sound and I can see it in you that you're not happy anymore with how your career is going right now.
But isn't the money enough to make you happy?
No. Wow. When it was all about the money for me, I think my life was like way different from that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was like to bring it back to the tropical house music. There was this big tropical house vibe and hype, but then the sound became commercial, like very commercial.
Oh, really? Okay.
And also, you could hear it in tracks from like Justin Bieber, I think, and it was like more towards the like the pop music, like the elements of the tropical house.
Yeah, you were hearing that in the radio records. Yes, in the very
exactly.
commercial. Right.
And then when I was getting booked for like festivals and stuff, I was still playing like house music, like tropical house with house music.
So what happens when you play it at a big festival like that style? Do people stay with you dancing or they stop dancing? Are they expecting that tropical house sound only from you?
No, that's the thing. Like in the beginning, when it was like this hype and more underground thing becoming more popular, people were dancing on the tropical house, in my opinion, and then when it became more commercialized,
okay,
people were expecting like it to be mixed with more dance or EDM sound, not like very hard EDM, but more like the pop EDM. But that wasn't what I liked as a DJ and a producer.
What do you like as a DJ? As a
the house music, like everything in the
Axwell,
house spectrum.
You mean Axwell, all that stuff, that house music?
Let's say more. I had like my problem is after 2 years, I'm getting bored, and then I'm into something else. So, like deep house, I really like.
House deep house.
Yeah, I like deep house, not like that EDM house ish. So I love like the old Axwell, but not like the
the stuff that in my world.
Yeah,
in my world, our house, soulful house, Afro house.
Yeah,
disco house, all that musical house.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't know. See, they don't know. People don't know that about you. They think it's only one track. Only one track you stay on.
No. Yes. No. That's not the thing. So I like and all, everything that goes more to like the techno side, I also like, but the old techno, not like the 150 BPM techno from now. the train.
I find techno today, when techno was out first time around, it sounds to me like deep house.
Yeah.
Techno now, today.
Yeah.
When I listen to techno, from when you say techno to me from back in the day, it's like, it's like real fast, banging hard. I'm like, what happened to techno? Where did techno? That's not techno, that's deep house. But I understand we have changes and everything is so...
It changes. And it changes so fast these days.
Dude, it drives us all crazy.
What is your opinion about... I'm not sure if this, the same thing is happening in the USA, but about the BPMs going faster and faster?
I don't know, but we've all been wondering about this too, because I'm seeing people saying... the 140 BPM is the new 110. I'm like, this is crazy. Why is it going so fast?
Do you hate it or do you love it?
The question really depends is this. It's not that I hate it, because somebody just took one of my old classics and sampled it and they sped it up. Yeah. That's not a problem with me. The question I have is, what's the drugs that they're taking to keep up with me? Because there must be some sort of speed that they're taking, a drug that makes the brain react that they want it faster and faster.
I think it's...
Maybe I'm wrong.
It's TikTok. It's the fast consuming of everything.
So you're telling me the 10-second videos, everything, the constant changes, the flashing like this, everything is speed?
How long did a track play when you were young? Like, it was like... tracks of like 7 minutes.
So let's talk about radio. Radio would be normally 3.5 minutes. Three and a half. That's normal radio record. When we were kids going out to a nightclub, a DJ would play from the beginning to the end, could be anywhere between minimum 4 minutes to 10 minutes. The same record, or DJs I knew like Larry Levan or any of those. We play a record for 30 to 40 minutes back and forth, same record.
Yeah.
We loved it. Now, there was a thing that happened in Vegas. DJs like Scissorhands that were doing quick snips. Next record, 10 seconds, this record, that record. And that became a genre, like speed. People like the changes. So, I guess guys like myself and fans of the original house music were a little bit like, what is that? Because you're playing 10 seconds. It's coming to the chorus part. What are you? Boom. Next record.
I've got the same. Like when I started like 10 years ago, I was playing a record like 4 or 5 minutes. And it wasn't that there were like drops in it. Maybe like a drop, but not that they build up, bam, bam. But now when I wait to the like second drop, people are bored. So I want to play the full record, but the crowd doesn't always want me to do it.
They want the next record already.
Yeah, but also because I'm on the same lineup as the DJs that are playing
fast.
Yeah.
So like what tempo?
10, 20 seconds, drop, break down.
Okay.
And I'm more like telling a story, let the beat play, let have the room to, let space for dancing and not just build up, drop. I hate that.
So what BPM when you're with these guys, are you normally picking up from what, like the other guy, what's he leading you at?
I wasn't talking about the BPM. I was talking about how fast they mix. Like,
well, then that, okay, no, one no, record, no, we know one. That we know they're doing quick changes, like quick mixes, but how fast are they playing the records? Would you say what tempo?
I have to be honest. I'm one of the guys who are playing the records fast at the moment.
That's okay. Wait, so what are you playing them at?
When I started like 10 years ago, I started my set at 115 or 18 BPM.
That's slow.
And I,
for me, that's slow. Go ahead. Keep going.
But that was like the tropical house
genre.
Vibe.
Yeah.
Genre. And there were not that many tracks. And so you had to pick the tracks you liked from the selection that wasn't that many. So right, sometimes right. You liked the tracks that were slow in BPM. And they sounded not very good when you sped it up. So I started maybe sometimes at 115 or 118 and never went higher than I think 125 or 126.
Okay, that's
cool. I always built it up. So I started slow and went more hard and fast at the end. But after COVID-19, people were crazy to party here in Holland and Europe.
Really?
So when I started on 125 and I finished on 128, 129. And last year, I started at 128 and sometimes I finish at 140. And it's very crazy because it's from like a creative side, it's a cool thing because you can do more stuff and you can put more records in different genres in one set because I always like build it up.
Right.
And never going back or the quick changes between like an urban track or house. It's always like house or techno.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when you're playing like 2 hours, you can build that, tell the story and get people like in your train. And that's what I find very cool these days. And when I look at all the DJs on the lineup, they're doing kind of the same, but not, maybe they stay at 128, 130.
So are you also seeing DJs playing with the pre-mix sets too at these festivals? In other words, their sets are already pre-made. Are you, you're still doing it live, right? You're still playing live?
I always did it live. It's just a funny story. One time I had a gig in, I think it was Germany, and every time I was mixing between the decks, there was like a technical issue that it's like this crackling sound, and people were looking at me like, how we can fix this? And I was like, no, I don't know. And then I was like, yeah, I have this like mixtape on my USB. I never told this anywhere. I have this mixtape on my USB.
Everyone right here at first. Yeah, stories.
And I put it on this mixtape and faked for like 1 hour, I think.
Did you do this? Time the mix come, you were like, put your hand up, put it down.
And then the people really liked it. And it was very strange because the people were getting on the stage behind me.
Then they were like,
no, you can't watch. But that was just very, very funny because it was just a mixtape what was online. Ooh. On my SoundCloud. But it was just fun.
Well,
but
you
know, like a pre-recorded set.
Okay. The reason why I ask is this. I know David Guetta. I know he played on vinyl. And I know he knows how to mix and all that. But there's been situations where YouTube videos came out where... for example, let me show it like this. See my phone, everybody? It's dark.
Yeah.
Meaning when you see the Pioneer and you don't see no lights.
Yeah.
What happens? You're sitting there saying, well, wait a minute. Those Pioneer's CDJs are not on.
Uh-huh.
But yet every time you hear a mix.
Yeah, you see this. Yeah.
So, you know, and then. The response came from the editorial was, well, we've had to time our music to the pyrotechnics and the light show. I don't buy it.
That's one of the reasons why I like real house music and real techno music, because the DJs are there for the music and not for the show. And from like a commercial side, I get it. Like, of course, when you got like this like big hit and you get booked on main stage Tomorrowland and they say to you, we have to do it pre-recorded because the show, blah, blah, blah. Who am I to say, no, I won't do it. I won't play if it's not live. Of course you say like, okay, let's go for it. But I'm in my circle of people, I never met someone who did it.
Okay, good. Now, so Zonestral becomes pretty big. You start getting out there. You did your commitments. What's the first big artist that takes you to the top? Like, what's that record that, you know, with a song that you really go, wow, this is huge now. This is big.
There were like
or a series of records.
Yeah. There were like this YouTube blog, music blogs. They had a YouTube channel, but also like an internet blog, and they were writing about music and stuff. And there was this channel called Mr. Suicide Sheep.
Okay.
It was very, very big at that moment.
Uh-huh.
And in that time, people were really talking about the music. Also, when they're not into producing music, it was finding new music in this specific genre and stuff. And it was posted on this channel on YouTube. And okay. I was refreshing the tab on my computer. And it went from like 10,000 listeners to 20,000, 30,000, 100,000 to like a million in like such a short time of time. And then I thought like, wow, this is going huge. And it was called, I think, Vogelvlucht, the record. And after that, I did a bootleg of John Legend, All of Me. Someone told me, like, you have to listen to this record. Maybe you can make a bootleg out of it. I made this little bootleg on Fruity Loops at that time. Used a saxophone in the build-up, and something magical happened to the record. It has been deleted and re-uploaded on YouTube by several channels because I didn't have the rights. But at one point, it had 100 million plays on YouTube. And it was supported by Tiesto and other big DJs at their radio shows. So I think that's one of the records that went like very big on the bootleg side. And then I did my first official release on Spinning with Sam Feld. And yeah, it's also like one of the founders of the tropical house genre.
And that's when, you know, your life changes at that point.
Yeah.
Everybody has that life-changing moment. It's like lightning hit you.
And it had all happened in like
3 How months. Many months? 2 months?
Two months.
Two like, to 3 months. So how long did you work to get to that, what we call that overnight moment? How long are you working to that moment where everything goes boom from the beginning?
It's hard to say because I already told, like, I started when I was 14, just
right. So 14, okay.
All those little moments that I was just playing around behind my computer, figuring out how to play the notes on the keyboard and how to mix and download the right samples and how to rip a vocal out of a tune and stuff like this. I think I was 21 when this moment happened.
Seven and a half years.
Because I didn't knew I was working all the time. All that time, I thought I was just doing that for fun.
Right. So
I never had this big dream about being a producer or a DJ. It's crazy,
no,
right?
That's the greatest part of this whole thing. You didn't have the dream.
No, I didn't have the dream.
You're just doing it.
I had the dream when I was doing it like the first year. I was like, wow, I finally found what I want to do in my life, and I'm quite good at it, and I want to do this for the rest of my life. Like, I know I can be a DJ for the rest of my life. When I'm like 70, I'm not behind the decks, but I can produce till I die. I can work in the music industry to whatever, whenever I want. So I really like the whole industry behind it. It's a very difficult industry to work in, but a very interesting world to work in, because you work with like very creative people, but also like the business side of it. So, and normally that's like clashing, and you have to find the right way to be creative and work with all those business guys.
Yeah, right. It's a balance. It's a balance of being a good businessman and being a creator.
Yeah.
And this is a problem with the art world. Some people are great at being creators and very bad at business.
Yeah.
Not understanding deadlines and getting things done because they're just playing the super cool. I want to be, you know, just do what I do. Let me just make the music. Forget about the business. And in this game today, you got to have both. You have to, and do them well. Because you got to be able to talk to record labels. You have to be able to talk to your management. You have to be able to talk to the people that work with you too, and keep a, you know, get records done, keep a system going, because this thing is changing all the time. Super fast. It moves like speed of light, like that.
Everything's yeah, weird. And the shitty part about it is that like most creative people aren't good in business, because I think there's something different in the brain.
Right. Most creative people are not accountants or doctors or lawyers. There's a reason. They're more, we find them to be more avant-garde, super cool. They don't follow the rules of everyday life. They have their own rules, which makes them.
Yeah, cool. But then you have like this whole new kind of artist, I think, because especially in the electronic music, because in the past DJs want to be like seen, but a lot of producers are DJs right now. And especially, I think, in the Tropical House, almost all the guys who were making the Tropical House genre in the beginning were like introvert people.
Mm.
And weren't like show guys.
No. They
just want to make music behind the computer.
Like a scientist working on the, you know, in the lab, right?
Exactly. And then we all went to the stages, and everyone thought we want to be a DJ, but no, we just want to make music. But when I found out playing records was cool and getting the crowd crazy, yeah, I loved it. But in the beginning, when I had my first gig, I remember I or 5 minutes before the show, I said like, this isn't for me. I want to go back home. I was so nervous.
Oh, tell us about it. What happened?
My friends bought the gear for me. I practiced a lot. I already knew what I was going to play that night. It wasn't pre-recorded, so I was very nervous. And I remember I was in the car. My parents were with me that day. I was sitting in the car with my parents, and we were driving up to Belgium, and we arrived at the festival, and they said to me like, your booker told us this is your first gig here in Belgium. And I was like,
here in Belgium?
I was thinking it's my first gig ever, but I was playing like, it's very, very cool to be here, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then I was so nervous. And then I said to my mate that was my booker and my manager right now, like, this is more for you. I'm not gonna do this. And he said like, yeah, but it's already paid, you have to. And I was like, oh shit, I have to do this right now. And a lot of my friends were there to support me. And after, I think, 3-4 records, I was like feeling it and getting loose. And I was like, the people were dancing and yelling. And I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. So a lot of things change in a few minutes.
But the anticipation of getting there, the stress, the nervousness, you're
oh,
like,
wow.
I want to go home. I want to go home.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had that for a little while.
Avicii, yeah. If you watched Avicii, he spoke about that. He said, I hated doing it. He would rather have been doing what you said, be in the studio all day and night. But one rec after another, the shows was what really did it to him. They killed him.
Yeah. And not only producers and DJs has this problem, it's also like the singers and other artists. They really like to create stuff, but they are performing because they need the money.
That's important, though. Well, because you need money to do what? To survive.
And to create.
And to keep doing this thing. Otherwise, yeah. If you have no money coming in, you can't stay in the game.
Exactly. But to be sure, I like to DJ. But the first year, it was stressful because I wasn't that skilled. So I was also nervous because I knew that skilled.
Dhavna, you have to understand, everybody, when they first start out, is in that same position. You're not going to be a superhero.
I know, but the difference...
Without training, you know what I'm saying?
But the difference was all of my colleagues were like DJing since they were like 14 or 16. So
yeah, because you came in late.
I came in very late, and my first gig was at a festival. And I never touched the decks.
Before. Now, your friends... Well, here's a question then. The friends that you took were your colleagues that... Yeah. Were they playing festivals or they're just small party DJs?
Small parties, yeah.
So you coming in like A-level list guy, A-lister guy. It's a different world, dude.
It was very strange to start as... you say A-lister, like a festival DJ.
You started at the top.
You
play at the bar.
And it's all because Tropical
play
House.
Play at the hashish place. No. With mom and dad are driving you to Belgium to play a festival.
Exactly.
That's big, dude. That's something to laugh at. There's nothing to laugh at.
It is because it's a story that you don't hear a lot.
Okay, Dhavna, here's something I wanted to bring out.
Yeah.
A lot of the EDM guys, producer DJs, are not making their own records. They're getting people to ghost.
Yeah.
Are you doing everything from scratch yourself, everything in the studio, or do you have a team of people now that you're working with today that you start making records with?
It depends on the record because sometimes I got like a top liner.
That's
someone sent me over
collaboration.
A demo of a track, but that track is also like made in a studio. So maybe I like some elements of the instrumental that they used. So sometimes I use their like chords or their. A little clap or a transition sound, but most of the time I do everything from scratch and I'm on the other side of the table. I'm co-producing for other artists too. So
does that mean mixing in the whole thing to finish product to where you hand in the wave file, MP3, everything?
No, I'm not that skilled in like mixing and mastering. I'm more a creator.
Okay.
So it depends on the track. Sometimes I think my mix sounds perfect and I only need to be mastered. And sometimes I'm like, nah, I think it can be like 20% better when like an engineer who studied for only like mixing and mastering brings it to the next level.
Do you think it's healthy to work with other people, or do you think it's good to stay but just on your own?
No, it's always good to, in my opinion, it's always good to work with other people. And also because sometimes I like stuck here in my studio, and it's good to invite other producers or songwriters or singers, or visit another studio to not only to collab, but just to make music, and will, and then afterwards you will see if it's for you or someone else.
Gotcha. I want to bring this up because I know you work with an awesome American artist.
Okay.
Friend of ours that came out of New York, Kathy Brown.
Katie Brown.
Yes, and you did a great, really good record. Not in her style, though. It's not her style. It's your style, which is super cool.
You but think the, it's my style?
Well, I think it's more towards your style. Yeah. It lends
because
itself.
Well, what was the thing? People were saying, like, it's not Tropical House. In my opinion, it's more
but it's not
a mix between house and Tropical House. Or
right. It's a, what I call, let's use the word hybrid.
Hybrid. Okay, cool.
Meaning, yeah. Meaning, 50% lends itself that way, but yet it's still 50% the other way.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not like a soulful American house record or Afro house record. So let's let's clear that up. Yeah. So, okay. So I just want to tell everybody, those that have been following the show know that Kathy Brown recently just went through a health major issue, and we're sending her prayers. She was diagnosed with stage 4 lung and brain cancer. And I know I don't want to do this, but I have to do this. Guys, if you can help Kathy Brown out, go to the GoFundMe page. Defected in many of the companies are giving her loads of money. She needs all the help she can. And Hoffman worked with her. I worked with her. She's a doll. We love her. And we wish her the best. And I had told him today off camera when the show started that Kathy Brown is battling for her life. I, like whenever any of us dealt with cancer, and I'm a husband of my wife from a cancer survivor. It's a tough, tough battle. So to say the least, tell us about the Kathy Brown story. It's because I had to bring her up. How did that all come together for you?
I have to think about it, but I think, let me check how this record came alive. I think my manager got in contact with her, or her manager or publisher.
That would have been Shannon or Buck's publisher.
I think so, yeah. And they sent over this this top line, but it was a little bit too soul for my...
For your genre, for how you
not my taste, but for the genre and for the what people expect from me, what I produce, and what the labels want from me. So, and but I want to give it a shot because, what a
why not, right? Why not?
And why not? And you must know, like a lot of top lines I get, I work with it and it doesn't work, and you go on to the next one, and this one got stuck in my head. And I was really fun to produce. And I remember I was producing the track, and another producer was rocking around the studios here, and he came in, and he was a very good piano player, and he did some very cool chords on it. And I used that one that on the record. And I wanted to do a little bit more like a housey vibe.
Yeah.
But in your opinion, it's hybrid. For me, sometimes it's hard to say when it's something like, I think it's more easy for you to hear it's produced by me as the Hoffner.
Well, you know, it comes back to that same thing we said a little while ago. How far do we make it so it's commercially viable for the genre?
Because you can
take it really far, and it's like it loses the concept of the style of you and the sound of what people are used to hearing.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of find that, what we call it, that 50% mark. It's like, oh, no more. That's it right there.
Yeah. And I was was doing quite a lot of shows for Happy Feelings. It's like a concept party here in Holland, and there were it's all about like house with a happy vibe on it, and they had just created a new label, and I thought like, ah, this will fit that label, and let's go for it.
Yeah, let's get it rolling.
Let's make music that I like.
Oh, and that's how it came together, and the record did really well. And good on both of you. Congratulations on that. Moving forward now, I'm going to bring to today, because I'm glad he shared that with us, that moment, and we wish Kathy Brown the best, of course. You're working on a new concept album.
Yeah.
Let's hear where are we going down now? Are we staying in the Tropical House vibe, or are we going away from it? Where are you at in your life now as a musician, musically?
As I already told you, I'm in my, especially in my shows, I'm at the higher level of the BPMs when you can call it still like house music.
125.
And I'm, 130.
Everyone breathe. Okay.
130, and I... I'm flirting a lot with like hard house.
Okay.
And not, I think there's a lot of how do you say, like, different sub genres in hard house, but I don't know if you know like Club Hats.
No, I don't know Club Hats. No.
You have to.
I'll find out now that I know about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's a very typical sound. It's a Dutch DJ and producer duo from back in the day, and they had this specific sound, that, like the Club Hats sound, and it was like, I think, from the late 90s and early 2000s. It has the like the dunk in it. And it's like the dunk thing there in USA or not?
What do you mean?
It's like a dunk is an offbeat bass.
No, I don't know.
Like what Calvin Harris did with his new tracks.
Okay.
The bass on the halftime.
Okay. So it slows down.
No, it's like, yeah, like. It sounds a little bit stupid.
Yeah, it's on the upbeat.
Exactly.
Yes, because that's what threw me off when you said on the offbeat. I'm like, no, so it's on N2, N3, N4. It says on the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then the bass sound sounds a little bit as if you slap on something with like a tube.
Gotcha.
A very specific
song. Oh, that's a Dutch German thing. That's not that we don't do with the Americans or the English. I never heard the English do that, but it's the Dutch I know doing that.
The English also did it. Okay. And it was a club in, I'm not sure, I think Liverpool, called like Wigan Pier.
Oh, okay.
I think. And that genre was very popular at that club. And but it was like from back in the day, and I'm sometimes playing that kind of music because it's music from when I was young, and I really feel it. And so I'm producing that kind of stuff. Just now it's just for fun, but maybe I want to.
You never know. You may give it to a label and it goes wah.
and for the rest, I'm producing like. Let's say house with tropical house influences, but on 130 beats per minute.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I want to bring back the saxophone here and there. So, yeah.
More
I
sax. Think that more sax. Man, more sax. Now,
I was a little bit bored.
Do you have a real sax player coming in, or are you playing it on the keyboard, the sax parts?
When I started, it was just a sample packs, man.
Oh, now just
sample CDs, yeah. And the funny part was, you had to be quick when every time there was like this new sample CD out there, you had to be like the first one with the best samples, because 1 week later you're on SoundCloud or YouTube and you're hearing exactly. Sample. But when you're the first one and never was. No one will use that part of the sample pack. But later on, I was lucky to perform and record with like one of the best saxophone players here in Holland.
So everybody has a start. You start with sample packs. You start, and then you grow. That's, you know, that's
it's hard to say like grow, because like one of the biggest hits was just like this sample from a sample pack. I chopped it up. I made my own version of it.
Well, we're gonna say you've had success, but you've also said, you know what? I don't want to just take things from samples. I
want to
get.
No, I want to be more creative and.
See what I'm saying? You want the creativity part. It's not like it's not an insult. It's. Growing, meaning that was then. I want more now. In that position, you can do it.
But I think the things like splice, is a big thing in USA, right? Also, right, for producers, it's a good thing, because people can produce fast, and people are introduced to producing on a younger age than maybe. When I was young, but people has to use it in the right way, and don't want to produce too fast and take some time. But when the competition is high, people want to produce very fast, and then the quality goes down.
Any dreams or aspirations coming to the ocean across to do Electric Daisyland, all that stuff, like, you know, EDC and what's the other one in the desert in LA, in California, Burning Man. You want to do any of that stuff? Is that part of your bucket list as a DJ producer, or you like staying in Europe?
It's not, of course I want to go there. But it's always hard for me to dream, and I don't have like I'm not a fan of someone, and I'm not that easy inspired by people, and I'm more like, my dream is to work in the music industry as long as I live. And I'm happy to do the gigs in Europe, but and the rest of the world. And I really want to go to USA, but I can die happily when I don't do gigs in the USA. And it's not that I'm ambitious.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's more, I am just happy how my life is at the moment.
You married, have children, or you still?
No, not yet. But I'm with my girlfriend, and we're planning to have kids. Yeah.
Is it hard for you being in the circuit to keep the good relationship and the business separate? You know, no. What I mean? Meaning,
yeah, yeah.
There's the drinking. There's the, you know, the women around. You know, there's a lot of things going on in these big festival gigs and everything.
Yeah, been there, done that. That's the
and
that's
you have the t-shirt, right? You have the t-shirt that says "I'm."
No, yeah, of course. I know what you mean, but when you're getting older, it's not that hard to keep it separate.
Recommendations for young producers? Can you help us? Can you tell what a young producer should not do?
Oh wow. Not do,
or
don't okay
or do or do, do right no, away.
Like let's say like let's do make the music that you want to make, and it's very easy to say that because it worked for me, but I think the chances of you going like very big is bigger if you produce a new kind of thing that people in the beginning think like, what is this genre or what is this kind of house, than just copying the rest of the people and that you can be found, because everyone is making the same shit and it's not special anymore. So I think there's more chance to grow big when you just do the thing Don't be like, I want to be unique. Just make what you think is right, what you feel, because you have to feel the music.
And someone else said that as well in another show. And because I asked the question about the classic names, Tiesto, let's say, or any of the names, Armin van Buuren, Louis Vega, you know, could go through any name, Carl Cox, whatever.
Yeah.
And what they had said was, don't copy them, be you.
Yeah, but
for you to stand out.
The thing is, like, Tiesto is copying everyone. David Guetta is copying because they already had their moments. They just are staying alive by being this commercial project. And it's cool. But when you're going to copy Tiesto, you're going to copy the rest of the world because everyone is making the same shit.
It's a good way,
right?
Everybody's making the same old shit. So if you make new shit, it better be standing out. And don't go too far over the line, because otherwise your stuff will be shit.
Exactly.
Children, remember, eat good and go to the bathroom, but don't make bullshit. Oh, man, that was great. And we want to say to you, you know, keep doing what you're doing. It's working. Don't ever stop. Because there's no reason to stop until they tell you not to do it anymore. And take the risks and push the envelope. You must keep pushing. Otherwise, you know what happens? We get all bored and then it becomes a job. And that's not what we want. We want it to still be something that you say, this is incredible, right?
Uh-huh. For sure. For sure.
When's your next gigs?
I'm going on a holiday. I'm going to Thailand for 1 month. So
awesome.
Let's chill a little bit. I had a very cool schedule this summer. So
are you playing out there? Are you playing out in Samui and Phuket? Or are you just going
out? No, I said I want to
like this.
Lay on a stretcher on the beach.
Drink.
With a nice drink. Exactly.
Well, my friend, Hoffner, I can't thank you enough for coming on True House Stories and sharing your success with us.
Thank you for letting me being part of the show.
Oh, yeah. You're part of our gang now. We can't thank you enough. You're amazing, bro. The king of tropical house music and one of the creators, Mr. Hoffner, right from Holland, giving us some stories and helping us share what made him famous and popular. Congratulations, my brother. May you have another 100 years of tropical house success. And wherever you take this genre to, we'll be following you.
Thank you, bro.
All right, everyone. Next week, we'll see the Burrell Brothers, New Groove Records, how it all started, house music in the early 90s, late 80s. They're going to be right here. I got them. Can you believe it? Because everybody always says, man, Lenny, you know everybody. Well, now that I met De Hoffner really well, I do know everyone now. Good night, everyone. Thank you again for True House Stories. See you all next week right here. Same bat time, same bat channel. Ta-ta.